This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Carmelia, Tisha Ik, and Juliet Jacobs. Earlier, we were discussing backpacking and how a Russian backpacking couple was arrested in KL this week for putting their baby in danger.
And we have a poll on social on Twitter, which is related to our second story, which we'll go into. So we asked you, what determines your fashion purchases? Most of you, 62%, are driven by how good it looks when you wear it. Less than a quarter, 21%, say cheap prices. And fewer than that, 17%, are driven by whether the brand is sustainable. So keep your thoughts coming in. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
I would say I go for comfort because I have skin issues. Y'all know my story.
I forgot to add that in.
That's true. And in fact, Murshida on Twitter also added perhaps whether celebrities wear it is another factor for people as well.
Once they see it, they want it, right?
Yeah. Like the Birkin bag craze. Mm. Come on. We all had one.
We all had one.
Anyway, the reason we're asking you that, Juliet?
Well, yes. So tainted garments, this is a new report by the Bloom Center for Developing Economies at the University of California in Berkeley. Now, basically, the report reveals that brands have been failing to regulate the exploitation of women and girls who work from home in India. And India is the world's second largest manufacturer and exporter of fashion products, second only to China, of course. And the report's author, Siddharth Kara, he's an activist and he's also an expert on modern slavery. And, you know, he did really in-depth research. He spoke to about 1,452 home workers and found that 85% of these workers are employed in supply chains that manufacture garments exported to the US and the EU. And the rest is a labor, the rest of the labor is a mix of domestic and export production. But the report is said to offer one of the most wide-reaching and comprehensive investigations yet into the conditions of work for women and girls in India's home-based garment sector.
So let's get a summary of the findings from the report. Firstly, women and girls tend to make up a majority of home-based work across numerous informal sectors, along with the exploitative conditions that come with them, which then in turn perpetuates their subordinated and oppressed status. Due to the lack of transparency and the informal nature of home-based work, wages are almost always suppressed, conditions can be harsh and hazardous, and the worker has virtually no avenue to seek redress for abusive or unfair conditions. And the situation of these home-based workers is worsened by the fact that there is little to no regulation or enforcement from the state regarding their conditions of work. So the researchers found that home-based garment workers in India consist almost entirely of women and girls from historically oppressed ethnic communities who scarcely manage to earn 15 cents. That's a US 15 cents per hour.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Incredible. That's barely even 1 ringgit per hour. Yeah? A 36-year-old garment worker near Jaipur who was interviewed for this paper said that we cannot leave this work even though we are treated so badly. If we leave this work, the company will never give us work again.
And you know, some of the other findings that were noteworthy was that almost none of these workers, and that's only about 0.1%, received any sort of medical care when they suffered an injury at work. None of the workers belonged to a trade union, and none of the workers had a written agreement for their work.
And in an interview with the New York Times, the author of the report, Siddharth Kara, noted that injury and chronic illness, including back pain and diminishing eyesight, were common complaints as a result of the monotonous work, which is often fulfilled in dusty or dirty environments and with no medical care offered by the subcontractors. The report also stated that few of the brands or companies who employ these workers in their supply chain were actually aware that this work was being outsourced to home workers, or of the conditions many home workers faced. Foreign brands found to be involved, largely household names, were not named in the report in an effort to discourage them from pulling out of contracts or from limiting economic opportunity, because I mean, the author specifically didn't want to name and shame anyone, because these women and girls, although they earn so little, whatever they manage to earn is very important. It's crucial to them. And if the brands pull out, then they will lose their homework and it will be disastrous for them and their families.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like whatever little, whatever harsh, horrible conditions, it was still better than nothing.
Exactly.
Which is what they had before. So, but okay. So though they were not named, these largely household names, which the report put, most probably, in fact, point to fast fashion brands. So fashion in itself is an industry worth about $2.4 trillion US. Mm-hmm. And that's according to estimates by McKinsey. And fast fashion is a huge chunk of it, you know, and fast fashion has just completely changed the way people shop these days. And brands like H&M, Zara, Forever 21, these are the most commonly known fast fashion ones. Mm-hmm. They are known for their lightning quick responses to trends. You know, they deliver to the stores. The prices are comparatively low. You know, they've just outpaced competitors for years. But fast fashion is also considered a very dirty industry. It consumes massive amounts of natural resources, and as we've heard, obviously it's rife with unsafe labor conditions and very, very exploitative practices.
And as we know from the April 2013 collapse of the Rana Plaza factory building in Bangladesh, which killed 1,134 people and left thousands more injured, you know, that brought worldwide attention to the appalling working conditions of garment factory workers who produce clothing for the world's retail stores. And the fashion revolution movement was born from this incident and calls for accountability in the process of making clothes. So we actually spoke to the founder of the fashion revolution movement, Carrie Summers, in our Live and Learn segment in late 2016. So here she is explaining the impact of the collapse of Rana Plaza back in 2013.
Well, I mean, Rana Plaza wasn't an isolated incident. I think that's really important to mention at the beginning. I mean, it could have happened in any fast fashion producing country around the world. And actually in Bangladesh, 2,200 people had been injured in the previous few years in 300 different safety incidents. But calls for reform of the industry and improvement to the building had gone largely unheeded. So unfortunately, it took a disaster on the scale of Rana Plaza to really start to bring about change in the industry. So when the factory complex collapsed in Bangladesh, around 1,138 people died and over 2,000 more were injured. So the repercussions of that are still going on in terms of people not receiving compensation, the people with injuries not being able to get in employment.
Yeah, so, you know, this whole tragic incident, that's what sparked Carrie to co-create the Fashion Revolution. And it's a movement that's called for a truly transparent fashion industry. Here she is explaining that.
We realised really from the outset that transparency had to be the focus of the campaign, because you can't start to tackle the social and the environmental exploitation within the industry unless you can see it. And we knew from the aftermath of Rana Plaza that brands didn't know where the clothing was being made. So we asked what should be a really simple question: who made my clothes? That was the start of the campaign. So giving consumers the tools to hold the brands to account, making them realise that their purchasing power meant something, that if they loved a brand, that brand, you know, it should be open and honest with its consumers. It should be able to tell them where their clothes were made. And so that sparked really a global conversation, consumers asking brands very shocked in the first year to receive that level of questioning on social media. And then as the years have progressed, and we're now in our third year, you know, starting to become more open, but to become more transparent, to disclose photographs. We had several major brands this year from American Apparel, G-Star, Fat Face, Warehouse, Zara, Massimo Dutti, all taking part and talking about their supply chains and showing photographs of their suppliers. And we certainly noticed after the first Fashion Transparency Index came out, a lot of the brands, particularly the luxury brands, who came back at us saying, well, you know, we do a lot of work, we just choose not to talk about it. And it's like, well, that's what transparency is. It's talking about what you're doing. It's talking about who your suppliers are. And they didn't quite seem to understand what the concept of a transparency index was. And so I think they've had to be sort of chivied and chided along, both from, the unions, from civil society, from the consumers, but I think it's now coming at them from all angles. And then, of course, you've got the new government legislation on top of that, which is really forcing them to change. So the California Transparency Act, the new Modern Slavery Act in the UK. And certainly any brand operating in the UK now has to report on what they're doing to address modern slavery in their supply chain. And they can report and actually say they're doing nothing. But obviously this doesn't look good for the brand. So I think a lot of them are suddenly starting to realise that they're going to have to really buck up and start to talk about where their clothes are made and to talk about what they're doing to address modern slavery, because otherwise it's going to be very obvious to anybody who reads their report that they're not doing anything to address it.
Yeah, we also ask her what the industry could do.
They would need to communicate about their supply chain right back to the raw materials. And so often, I mean, so few brands know where their raw materials come from. And it's difficult, it's complex. Uzbekistan is one of the world's major suppliers of cotton, but that cotton is routinely labelled as made in Bangladesh. So it's very hard even for the people buying the cotton to know where it's really come from. In Syria, Islamic State have taken over 3/4 of the cotton fields. So it's really important for us as consumers to know that we're not supporting terrorism, that we're not supporting slave labour, forced labour, child labour. And at the moment, that is impossible. So brands need to be doing more. They need to be reporting on what they're doing. But it is difficult. It's challenging when some brands, I've been told, some of the big brands operating in the UK don't even know the first tier factories where their clothing is made. So there's a lot of work to be done. It's going to be several years before they can report on their second, third tier factories, probably even longer before they know where their raw materials are coming from. And until then, we as consumers are very much in the dark.
So then we were curious, is fast fashion bad? Why care about where a garment is made or how well made or good looking it is if you can just replace it at minimal cost to you? And here's what Carrie had to say.
I think it's important to realise that having a job shouldn't preclude you from having a good job, a decent job. So yes, it is necessary. Bangladesh has managed to halve its rate of poverty through, a lot of it through the garment industry. So, we are definitely not saying boycott fast fashion. We're not saying don't buy. We're saying, those jobs have to be decent jobs. They have to be good jobs. They have to ensure that the worker can at least have a minimum living wage, that they can live, even if they are living in a slum, that they can afford to live in a slum, which they can't at the moment. So, that's what we really need to be seeing from the fast fashion industry.
And what can we as consumers do? Here's Carrie's advice.
Well, I'd say very simply, ask the question, who made my clothes? I mean, that's the hashtag, who made my clothes? If you're on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, ask the brand the question. You can even phone them up or write them a letter and just keep on plugging away. Try to get some answers. Try to find out at least about the first tier factory. And that will make you feel better about your purchase because you know that you're being responsible. I was told by an industry insider that for every one person who asked the question, who made my clothes, they took it as representing 10,000 people who felt the same but couldn't be bothered to do anything about it. So I think that shows the incredible power that we have as consumers if we choose to use it.
Yeah, so I just ask that simple question, every time you're looking to buy something, who made my clothes? Mm-hmm. Check out the labels. I know, again, like she was mentioning about the cotton, maybe it's grown somewhere here, but the knit on the label it says Bangladesh. But I guess just keep asking questions. There's so many resources on the internet. There's so much we can actually do.
And use the power of social media, right? If you are active on social media, call them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And say, where was my clothes made, right? Yeah. And, we haven't even gotten to the environmental impacts of fashion. According to the UN Environment Programme, the fashion industry produces about 20% of global wastewater, 10% of global carbon emissions. That's more than all international flights and maritime shipping. Mm. And textile dyeing is the second largest polluter of water globally. And it takes around 2,000 gallons of water to make a typical pair of jeans. Did you know that? I did not know that.
Anyway, I only have 2 pairs of jeans.
You are an example for us
you
all.
Are, only 4,000 gallons of water. Gone to waste.
And every second, the equivalent of one garbage truck of textiles is landfilled or burnt. And if nothing changes by 2015, the fashion industry will use up a quarter of the world's carbon budget. And washing clothes, you know, that is also a problem. Mm-hmm. It releases half a million tons of microfibers into the ocean every year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, one expert has suggested that, you know, when you're trying to choose something to buy, you know, a clothing that you want to buy, you ask yourself, you buy something that's so expensive that it hurts, and that will curb your fast fashion shopping sprees. I mean, the point, of course, is to just make you pause and ask yourself, how much do I really want this? Or I suppose, how much do I even really need this?
Do I
need that sixth pair of jeans?
Obviously not, because Tina can survive on two.
Yeah, you wear one for 2 or 3 days, you put it in the washer and you wear the other one for another 2 or 3 days, and that's your week basically, and then cycle continues the next week. Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
Mm. And like, I know I've spoken to a few zero waste advocates on Earth Matters, and you know, they all have like maybe 4 or 5 articles of clothing which they just mix and match, and you know, they're extremely fashionable looking ladies. The ladies
that I've seen them come in.
Yeah.
Juliet, every time I'm like, really? This is a zero waste person? Doesn't look like the, you know, the image you form in your head when you think about a zero waste person, you know what I mean? Yeah, but I mean, I don't shop much. Mm-hmm. Last time I shopped was probably 2-3 years ago. I will buy maybe 3-4 t-shirts, and then that's what I use for 2 or 3 years until they are worn out.
I mean, it's really about your willpower against the onslaught of marketing, especially with online retail.
Yeah.
You can't look at your social media without being bombarded by these advertisements, you know, what promotions and discounts are on. So, yeah, it's really, you got to just pull back and ask yourself, do I need it?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've gone down wormholes. Tina knows this. She has chided me for it, you know, of shopping on...
When you get a delivery.
When I get a delivery and it's some new clothes. I've stopped. But I've noticed.
Yeah,
it's a terrible thing because the clothes are so cheap, they look so nice, and you just fall into that trap of wanting it.
But sometimes you can't help having to buy new clothes because of changes in your circumstances in life, right?
You know, size after having a child.
It could require a complete overhaul of your wardrobe. And in those instances, I mean, it's justifiable. Mm-hmm. But if you're just shopping for the sake of shopping, even though you've got like tons of articles of clothing articles in your wardrobe that's not been used, then what's the point?
Mm. And that is the problem with fast fashion, isn't it? Because everything is there, it's trendy, it's cheap, and you know, you buy and throw essentially if it doesn't look good. And with online shopping, it's so cheap that like even if it doesn't fit, you don't really care because
you might be able to return them.
Yeah.
More carbon footprints and your logs. I mean, thank goodness I work in radio. I don't have to be fashionable. Yeah, you know? I mean, you don't need people to see you. So I'm wearing the same t-shirt every day almost.
But less is more. I mean, definitely. I would say that less is more.
Yeah. I do feel a bit guilty about my Chinese New Year baju now. But
Sherrick came in with a new dress. I noticed like maybe 5 minutes before we went on air, Sherrick. Sorry, but I did notice.
I double checked
with Julia to make sure that you did. You were wearing a new one.
No one's judging you.
It's Chinese New Year's once a year. It's fine.
Yeah, I. In my defense, I really rarely shop as well. But that's because of circumstances, you know, having a child. All your money goes to cheating. Yeah. But anyway, a last check on our Twitter poll. We were asking you what determines your fashion purchases. So most of you weighed in by saying that as long as it looks good on you, that's what you go for. Equally divided between cheap prices and sustainable brands. So we hope that you'll think more about the sustainability of the labels that you're choosing and ask yourself, do you really need it?
Yeah.
And sustainable can look good too. Mm-hmm. So
there's just a little bit more pricey, I think, then, but you know.
But if you're buying
articles
less,
of clothing do you need?
Yeah. Yeah,
precisely.
So environmental sustainability as well as social sustainability, right?
Yeah, anyway, we've come to the end of the show, I'm afraid. You can still keep the conversation going by tweeting us at BFM Radio. You can follow us on Facebook. Just look up BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of today's show, you can look up the podcast on our website, the BFM app, as well as on Spotify. That's all for now from me, Tina Camellia, as well as Julia Jacobs and Tishao Ik. Up next is Front Row with Lim Soon Heng, but first we'll leave you with Talking About a Revolution by Tracy Chapman. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.